What's a ballooning franchise, franchise salary cap mean for the Seattle Seahawks and for the rest of the league? Yahoo Sports' Dory Epstein joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Dory, how's it going?
I'm going well, Stacey. How are you doing?
Fantastic. So we've read your column up on Yahoo Sports and just going to run through some of what it means for the rest of the league, and then we'll get to some Seahawks-specific stuff too. But can you explain where the massive increase came from?
Yes, absolutely. It's interesting when you see about 30 million jump in the salary cap, record high. But then you really have to think of two things. One, what does this mean percentage-wise rather than just the raw numbers? And two, what's happened in the last several years? And so I talked to executives across the league. And excuse me, guys, as I'm in Indianapolis for the scouting combine, as I imagine some of us all are. But I talked to executives, and they said this is really less of a, new media deals causing an increase in the new money, and much more of a reset from the COVID-19 years. And I thought the number that stuck out to me most was that from 2016 to 2020, the NFL salary cap increased 27.6%. That's the 4 years leading up to COVID. Then the 4 years after, 28.9%. So this is really more that the NFL has fully rebounded from COVID-19, but not necessarily gone much beyond that.
Which franchises do you feel are going to benefit the most from this whole deal?
Yeah, it's a great question, Michael. And I think that's something that the executives were telling me is that this is not necessarily going to change who wants to spend, but it might change particularly franchise tags. And the idea is that if you are considering tagging your player, but you have to worry about the cap space because the franchise tag hits completely, all of the cap hit in 1 year, now it's going to be something that will tip you over the iceberg. And I think similarly, the question is, well, who wants to? I mean, the Broncos are one that stand out to me, because if you're not going to continue on with Russell Wilson, which seems to be where it's heading, although we never know. I know you mentioned that in the opening here. They now can absorb more of that financial hit this year than they would have been able to prior. And so I think someone who is trying to sort of like get right after COVID, this is their time to do it.
I thought to me that was one of the more interesting things about this is in my mind, I just automatically go, more money to spend and you're cap compliant more easily. But then you think about different ways that teams utilize that. And you're right. It's like, is there a franchise tag you were hesitant to use? Is there a player you were hesitant to cut? It's like it gives teams flexibilities in so many ways. Is there, when you look at the free agency period, obviously, this is mentioned by an executive in your article. He said superstars get paid no matter what the market is. The question is how much of that filters down to the next run of guys. Can you talk to us a bit about that conversation you had with that executive about what it means for that kind of like middle tier free agents?
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is I'll talk to agents about this week in Indy. I talked to executives for the story I already published. But the idea is that there are going to be guys who think, hey, 30 more million per team, well, great, then I'm worth 12 million instead of 10, or I'm worth 10 million instead of 8. And when you look at that, that's not necessarily the case, particularly if a team has been operating with option cards. Someone who is very happy to be in Indianapolis. But it's particularly if you have someone who has been operating like under the salary cap and they've been operating in the red. And so I think that you start to understand, well, then if the agents misjudge the market, guys might start taking one-year deals because they say, I think I'm worth more than what's being offered now. And so it's essentially adding franchise tags that aren't called franchise tags to the market so that guys can get back to the market next year when they believe they are going to be worth more. Now, are they? I don't know, but I think that's what will be interesting.
Do you feel like GMs were anticipating this type of bump? Do they have any type of inside information to where they can kind of anticipate this thing? Or are they waiting around like everyone else? You get the number, then they get to work. Do you think that they were kind of getting ahead of this whole deal?
Yeah, that's a great question. I talked to three different executives, all of whom projected the salary cap to be somewhere in the $245 to $250 million this year. And so that means that when they were planning, they did expect a bump, but not a bump all the way to 255, which is what we saw. And the reason they do that is they would rather project conservatively and make sure that they can get all of their plans. And then if you have a little extra, great, better to do that than make a plan that you're not going to be able to follow through with. So not all of them were shocked about this. Actually, what I thought was interesting, I will say, I guess I did talk to one agent who pointed out that, as the executive said, this is a big win for the NFLPA and particularly for first-year executive director Lloyd Howell to be able to sort of negotiate this bump right away. And they're not saying a lot about that. And I think that's interesting just when you consider the management styles and potentially it's going to be a more collaborative than combative approach between the PA and the league to negotiating matters like this.
You spoke with agents, you spoke with executives, you spoke with lots of folks about the NFL salary cap increase and about the league's offseason. What to you was maybe the most striking or surprising or interesting thing?
That's a great question. I think one of the things that really struck me is the way that this agent was sort of talking to me about all of the things that they have to, the executive was talking to me about what they have to consider. Because when I think of it, I'm like, great, more money, but also everyone has the same amount of money. So does it offset? And this executive pointed out to me that if you look at the growth of the salary cap over the roughly last 18 years, then you have this system where the superstars are getting way more money than they did before. The minimum salary guys are getting more money than they had before. And so the free, that sort of like middle class that almost doesn't exist in the NFL, that's where this is getting squeezed. Then you add to the fact that guys can have 55 instead of 53 on an active roster now. They can have more practice squad guys. Well, it's still the same salary cap. And so if you wonder why with this increase in money, we're not necessarily seeing an increase for those tier two and tier three guys, that's why, is because teams are still having, are actually paying more people from the same pool.
Is there a free agent that you felt will benefit the most from this whole deal, or someone who won't benefit? I'm just, you know, numbers ain't my thing, so I'm relying on you to keep making sense of this for me.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'd want to look more into it. But I think one person who interests me is a guy like Chris Jones of Kansas City, because I think that the question is, like, we saw last year they get down to the wire and really pass the wire, because that is a defensive tackle who is the heart and soul, physically and emotionally, of the Kansas City defense, who sat out the first game, which was a loss against the Lions, so that he could get what he wants. And I think that this is not going to be something where teams just all of a sudden want to pay him this multi-year deal, because he's an older guy, and I think that this is more about the cap hit now. And so I think there are the guys who might benefit from it, and there's also the guys who might not benefit as much as they think when they first see a number like this.
Hey, kind of leaning back into that dead cap salary, dead cap question. You mentioned, hey, for a team like the Broncos, it's easier to absorb a lot of dead cap and make a tough decision. The Seahawks are a team that's also looking at a tough decision when it comes to Jamal Adams. I know that for fans, they go, oh my God, move on from him, I'm done, like if they're frustrated with him. But the team has like a $20 million in a dead cap if they move on. Is that a kind of decision that you can kind of see being more likely now?
I think that's the point. If the Seahawks didn't want to make that move, I don't think this will change their mind. But if they were on the fence, I think this could hit the scale. And I think it also depends, okay, well, how much cap space did they have before this $55 million increase or reset? And so when you sort of look at this, a lot of this is about where you were before, but it's more about a tiebreaker than it is about completely changing someone's mind.
You got a new head coach over here in Mike McDonald. I'm sure he's sitting down with the accountant. Do you think that this changed the way that he approaches this offseason, or do you feel like there's a template that coaches, especially new head coaches in general, just follow regardless?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me this question, because y'all are way more plugged into the Seahawks than I am. But when I was watching Pete's final press conference, and he had that comment about, after 14 years, Don, you've been waiting for this chance, and now it's your time. And it, like, took me a minute to be like, hasn't he been the GM during that time? And in some ways, it felt a little, again, from the outside, y'all know better than I do, like a little bit of a slight of, like, I've been running the show, not you, and now it's your turn to run the show. And so I think that this is a chance for John Schneider to be like, hey, here's what I think is best for the team. And while Mike McDonald has a great vision for how he wants to scheme players, and he was incredible at scheming the Baltimore defense, and I also think that he will be heavily involved in the direction they go, I do think that a case like this, it will more be them having conversations to be on the same page, but I would expect Schneider to be the one calling the shot.
I'm going to totally shift gears, step away from the salary cap, and talk about the draft. You and Jason Fitz broke down on Inside Coverage this draft class of quarterbacks. Seattle fans are obviously wondering if Seattle's going to do something at 16, if there's a J.J. McCarthy, you know, if maybe, you know, later on they find Michael Penix or Bo Nix. How do you see this quarterback class after the very obvious picks at, you know, 1 and 2?
I think what's interesting is that we say very obvious picks at 1 and 2, which is true. But what I thought was fascinating to me is that Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network had a conference call for a bunch of us last week, and he said, it would be crazy, essentially, if four quarterbacks win the top five picks, but he doesn't think it's out of the question. So when you're talking pick 16, to me, if you really want your guy, you're going to have to trade up from that. And again, is that guy going to be a better, a more sure bet, and a more sure bet also in the long haul than Geno? And I would have questions about that. And so I think that while I don't know, it'll be interesting. I also don't think that every team is going to value these quarterbacks in the same order. We always see a little bit of difference. And so for the Seahawks, what will be important is just trying to get as much intel as they can about those top teams, about who likes what quarterback and what they're willing to do to get there, and then go and figure out how much do we want our guy and what are we willing to do.
I look at the teams with the most cap space, and I go all the way down to number 6 and number 7. That's Houston Texans and the Detroit Lions. Man, I think both of these teams are already attractive when it comes to free agents just because of the year that they had and the potential. Should we expect one of these teams or both to be extremely aggressive now that they got a bit more to work with?
It is, okay, what contracts do you already have coming up, whether it's like a Laramie Tunsil type that you need to extend? Who do you want of your star rookies? How much are you planning ahead for them? And then also, what draft capital do you have? Because, again, Houston traded to get that 2 and 3 last year. So how much do they need to consider that when they're averaging, like, what kind of cheap guys they need? But I do think that if I'm a free agent and I'm deciding between teams, like, yeah, I would love to go to one of those two teams, because not only are they really talented, they're also ascending, and you can go be part of something special in either one of those places.
She is Yahoo Sports' Jori Epstein. Make sure you check out her latest column on Yahoo Sports about the salary cap, and great stuff on her X.com account previewing the draft, too. Thanks so much, Jori.
Thanks, Jori.
Great to talk to you, Stacey and Michael. Talk to you soon.